And we welcome you on into a Super Sunday night here on Heatwave Sports, Fox Sports Radio Las Vegas. Tim Unglesby and Angel with you here in Sin City. My co-host, always, New York City's own, Tom Barton, TomBartonSports.com. Tom Barton, plus one to the Barton family. Congratulations, sir.
Thank you. Yes, Finnegan James is officially here, and he's kind of sleeping through the night. Yeah, not to make the other parents jealous out there, but he's a really good sleeper, which, as any parent knows, is a really good compliment to him.
I was asked a question once, or a few times actually, would you ever have another child, you know? And I was like, I don't know. Cameron's, she was just like the perfect baby. And you know what I'm talking about, right, Tom? Sleep through the night, doesn't cry a lot, very aware of everything that's going on around her. And I was just like, I don't even know if I want to try to delve into the possibility of that going the complete opposite way with the next child. And I know this is broached by everybody when they say, you love your kids all the same. But in my mind, I'm like, I don't know if I could love another child as much as I loved her, you know, when she was a baby. So for me, it was like a hard no. But props to you, man, because you have three wonderful children now.
It's so funny. We have talked about this, and we, you know, have this in our minds as parents. You go, you just can't, you know. And I actually talked to my mom before I had my daughter, and I said, I'm a little worried. She said, why? I said, because I just can't imagine loving anything on earth more than I loved my son. And she said, trust me, you will. I said, Mom, I'm worried. I'm concerned. I'm nervous about it. I just don't know. I just don't know. Within minutes of Gracie being born, I was like, oh, what the heck was I worried about? But I was concerned enough to kind of have a conversation with my mom. Now I have two, and I was like, well, maybe she was a girl. Maybe not. I don't know. You know, I love these two so much. They were perfect. We're a well-oiled machine. He's out, and I'm going, okay, yep. There is still love in this Grinch heart, because my goodness, how it just happened so quick. But it's funny that you say that, though, Tim, because, you know, I had the conversation because I was so concerned.
And I asked you literally, I want to say it was that night, right? That night you were in the hospital room watching Yankees play. They were in San Diego, so of course it was midnight when you were watching it. And you said, you know, I said, are you worried about how the other kids are going to take to Finn? And you said, no, they jumped on board with the Barton train and looking out for baby brother. It's just a wonderful thing, man.
My son turned around from a 10-year-old boy to about a 15-year-old boy overnight. Hey, wait, you got to do this. No. Hey, be careful. No. Yeah. And he's, you know, everything that I wanted from an adult boy, even though he's only 10 years old, he just absolutely turned around. I said, man, this is pretty wonderful. Yeah. I'm not exactly a young pump, Tim, you know, and I got to make sure that someone's around to take care of him. There's a 10-year age difference. He'll be fine.
Yeah. And you like how we gave him the prerequisite nickname, Finn. That was the first thing, yeah. I thought of. Finn. There it is.
Oh, yeah. Abby likes Finn. I like Finnegan. So Finnegan, either one of them, perfectly fine. And my mom likes Finny, which, Finny, you know, that'll probably go away as soon as he starts walking.
Well, that's the human element of Heatwave Sports. All our great listeners over the years, you know all about us. And whenever there's a huge announcement in our personal lives, we obviously have to take a little time to celebrate that. And again, congrats, Tom. It's a wonderful thing. And now you have your double play combination, 10 years apart, Tom, but you got the shortstop and the second baseman all wrapped up now.
That's hysterical, because that's where Tommy plays and I coach today. You know, just a quick shout out, Rob Mish on his Twitter page, on my Twitter page, all over social media, he just wrote an article about my time in the hospital, where I'm watching the Yankees, I'm betting the Rangers, you know, I got a little NBA playoffs. I had a good weekend posting last weekend about Kansas City. I won a huge game with, and I posted that out on Twitter as well for Tom Barton Sports, and how after all that, Tim, all that grinding, all that winning money, you know, it wasn't Cristal for me. It was going to buy Enfamil. But it's a really good story by Rob Mish in the Chicago Sun-Times this week. So really want to give a shout-out to him. And if you guys want to go click on that, give him some likes. That would be great, too.
Tom, we expect nothing but that's what we expect out of you. I mean, literally, you had a gallbladder surgery a few years ago. And amongst waking up from your surgery, you were looking at the games for the following day. So, I mean, having a baby when you're not the one having the baby.
Right? You remember that? The doctor being like, what are you doing? And he said, you know, the doctor said to me, and my doctor's very fun with me. He kind of knows what I do for a living, you know. And he said to me, this is supposed to be a no-stress environment. I said, well, I'm just doing research. I'm not getting stressed out yet, you know, not until the games start.
I think you went 2-0 that day, too. So, you know.
Gallbladder and all.
Well, we got a nice show for everybody lined up tonight. We're going to get into the Stanley Cup, which is now set. I know Tom talked a lot about the NBA Finals coming up. We'll let him rehash a little bit of that here tonight. Major League Baseball, of course, as we enter the month of June now, two months into the season, where every team stands. Who are we looking at that's going to make a summer run here? Some of the trade deadline is, whether you believe it or not, the trade deadline is coming up here relatively quickly. So we'll take a look at some possible names that could be moved here in the summertime. And interesting, we added this segment on that we'll get to in a little bit. We added this on here just a few minutes ago via the text. We'll look at this big hot story across the country now with Caitlin Clark and the WNBA and how that has become, I don't know if it's good news for the WNBA when you're looking at it, but we'll get into that a little bit later on. But Tom, I wanted to start with Stanley Cup, man. It's all set up tonight. The Edmonton Oilers advance to their first Stanley Cup since, 2006, am I right? 2006 was the last time they were there. They get a 2-1 win in Game 6 tonight over Dallas. So we're going to have Edmonton, Tom, first team from Canada to play in a Stanley Cup final since 2011. That was Vancouver. And I know I'm not counting the COVID years, so Vancouver 2011. Last Canadian team to win a Stanley Cup, Tommy, was Montreal back in 1993 when we were teenagers. And they're going to take on the Florida Panthers, who are now back-to-back Stanley Cup appearances. This should be a fun series to watch, Tom. And I think, I guess we could just start with Edmonton, is that the knock on Edmonton was that the goaltending was going to be their Achilles heel in the Stanley Cup playoffs. But somehow, some way in the last two series, it looks like that's become not an issue. Stuart Skinner, unbelievable in this series against Dallas.
Yeah, I mean, look. I kind of touched on it a little bit last night, Tim, where you expect Edmonton to be able to score. They have had a little bit of scoring problems, but I don't even look at it as scoring problems. It's almost a change in philosophy in Edmonton, which we talked about right before midseason. And I said, you know, it's been a conscious effort by Edmonton right around February or so, late January, February, to go full defense. And they change their philosophy when they have a guy like Draisaitl, when they have a guy like Connor McDavid, going down the road, Nurse and everybody else. When you have those players to switch to a defensive mindset and they have just adapted it and them go, yeah, okay, we're buying in. It's fantastic. I mean, Skinner's not facing a lot of shots because their defense is fantastic. So, yeah, Skinner did great. But I'm just more impressed with the idea that even late in that game, they just couldn't get a shot off. I mean, late in the game, with 2 minutes to go, a little bit more than 2 minutes to go, they pulled the goalie. I think they got one shot on goal. One shot on goal with a man advantage, 2.5 minutes to go, and your life is on the line. That is just tremendous defense. And it's the small things. If you watched Edmonton putting it in a corner and you know, instead of trying to get it out and trying to play, no, just pushing, just a little pushing and shoving, just a little against the boards, just a little knocking of the skates. You know, the little things. Knowing, well, 2 minutes, you know, 5 seconds here, 5 seconds there is going to win this game. And that is brilliant with their strategy of how they're doing things. That is how they're going about things. And it is a different team than we've seen.
And I know a lot of people that want to just say, well, you know, McDavid, Draisaitl, those are the guys. But Hyman, we saw him with a key goal tonight. Bouchard is a key part of that integral offense in Edmonton. They're dangerous, Tom. Very dangerous team. And if the defense is clicking, like you said, and Skinner's not letting in soft goals, they're a threat. But what about the beast that they're going to take on in the Florida Panthers?
Yeah, that's the problem. I kind of like both these teams. Look, if I could take out my Rangers bias here with what Florida just did, these are two teams that for the last couple of years I followed. If you remember, two seasons ago, I took the Florida Panthers to win the championship. Last year, I took Edmonton. I had Edmonton against Florida for 3 years running, it seemed like, and I had Edmonton winning this year, not against Florida, against the Rangers. So I've been preseason jumping on these teams, and I want Edmonton to win for so many reasons. Look, I'm not Canadian, and it's not a Canadian, but I get it. I get that it's good for the sport if Canada does well, okay? I get that it's good for the sport if Connor McDavid does well. I'm a McDavid fan, a massive McDavid fan, and not just because of the last couple of years. I've been a fan of his. So has everybody since he burst onto the scene. McDavid has made more money for me than any other hockey player outside of Mitch Marner in the last 5-6 years. I love betting with him. I love betting on him. He had a goal again tonight. I like everything about McDavid. I like everything about Draisaitl. I like this Edmonton team. They're an easy team to root for. But when I look at what Florida did to the Rangers and did to Boston and the style that they played even against Tampa, you look at this team and you go, they're just the complete team. They are the absolute, if you want to play a defensive game, which Edmonton seems to want to play, they'll have no problem doing it. Florida doesn't get rattled with that. And you think about the goalies that they have beaten. They beat, you know, Vasilevskiy and Igor in this playoff series. They're not going to be afraid of Stuart Skinner, no matter how well he's been playing. We are in a position where Florida is probably the better team. Florida is more than likely the overall more disciplined team. They have more depth. They are more physical. There's a lot of mores and a lot of check marks in the Florida column. But as I said last night, every now and then in sports, you get that moment, that year, that playoff series, that finals, whatever it might be, where the greatest player in the sport steps up. Patrick Mahomes makes the play. Right, you look at Bryce Harper hitting the home run, whoever it might be. You look at the greatest of the greats, and those guys step up, and it's kind of their moment. It sort of feels like Edmonton's moment, doesn't it? That Connor McDavid knows his legacy is on the line. He's as close as he's ever gotten here, obviously. Draisaitl's legacy is on the line. He's as close as he's ever gotten. And sometimes in sports, that's enough. The fact that they have the two best players on the ice at all times, yeah, sometimes that's enough. I like Florida's team play. I think when I watch from Florida, it's nearly impossible to bet against them. They are just a dynamic team. But man, something's telling me, and maybe it's me wishing, but something's telling me, this might just be the exclamation point on a Connor McDavid career.
Looking at a live betting odds, Tom, the Florida Panthers, $1.25 favorite to win the Stanley Cup. Some places you can get Edmonton +105, +110. Game one will be Saturday night in Sunrise, Florida game one will be in Florida for Stanley Cup finals, Tom. So 125 Florida, you can get plus money with Edmonton right now.
I think that's going to move. You're going to start to get the casuals here that just know McDavid, and they're going to come pouring in, right? They're going to come pouring in and just get into a position of, okay, it's just McDavid, so we're just going to take a shot. I think it's indicative of the series, though, that it's only basically 125. I expect it to be even money by the time it goes off, Tim. And that's I think that's, look, this is a series that I think it's going seven. I do. I think it's going seven, and we have a classic. I think there's going to be a couple overtimes in there. I think they're very, very evenly matched teams as far as who can win the series. I think Florida's the better team, but the other team's got McDavid and Draisaitl.
And even though Florida is the favorite, Connor McDavid, Tommy, is the favorite to win the MVP. Plus, well, it's 2-1, looks like. Alexander Barkov would be 4-1. Sergei Bobrovsky, 4-1. Tkachuk is 6-1. So an Oiler, followed by four Panthers. Draisaitl, 7-1. Evan Bouchard, 8-1. Those are your top. If you like betting on props like we do, Tommy, and futures, that's where it sets for the Stanley Cup MVP or Stanley Cup playoffs MVP.
You know, I don't think you could play. I don't think you could take it, Tim. And I really don't. Look, if you believe, and I talked about this with the NBA last night. If you believe that Edmonton is going to win the Stanley Cup, everybody's going to run to the bank, make sure you go out there, you run to the counter, and you go, okay, I'm taking McDavid, right? But would anyone be shocked if Draisaitl wins it? I mean, think about it. If they're double-teaming McDavid, Draisaitl's right there. So it's hard to bet on that side. As far as Florida goes, I highlighted it last night. Any given night, anyone could win. And if you're going with Tkachuk, what about Bobrovsky, right? I mean, what about Barkov? There's not a good betting market for the MVP of the Stanley Cup just because there's so many good players. It is very reminiscent of what I was saying about the Boston Celtics last night. Sure, everybody wants to bet Tatum, but Brown just won it. It could be White. I mean, there's a number of guys. The only thing is if you like the Dallas Mavericks, you know, you could jump on Luka, and I don't think anybody else is going to be in it. But with the other teams, with both of these hockey teams, there's going to be a lot of money coming in on the big names, but I could see any number of players winning.
I would think if you're going to bet Edmonton, and Edmonton wins the Stanley Cup, and McDavid has a couple goals in the series, or a game winner, or three goals, unless one of the other guys just completely goes nuts, that's the option. But at 2-1, I mean, it is what it is, right? If you're going to go the other side, right, Tom, you're hoping Bobrovsky can shut that offense down, and if he does, I think he wins it at 4-1. But again, the odds are, I think, a little light in any value. So at some point, what do you say? Like you said, you just kind of just let it go, or you make a couple bets on a couple different guys, or just don't bet it at all?
I don't bet it at all. If this was, you know, if McDavid was 4-1, 5-1, okay, maybe. But at 2-1, absolutely not. I think on his own team, he's a coin flip with Draisaitl. What does Draisaitl, you say?
7-1.
Now that's a shot. At 7-1, I might take a shot at Draisaitl. Maybe. Yeah. He would be out of the names that we just talked about, I would rather him over Tkachuk, over Bobrovsky at those odds, over McDavid at those odds. Give me Draisaitl at 7-1. Mm-hmm.
Game one, Stanley Cup Finals, Saturday night. Should be a good one, like Tommy says. Real quick, one more NHL note, Tom. I don't know if you heard the news. For Vegas fans, Vegas Golden Knight fans, that Jonathan Marchessault was at an event earlier in the week, and he publicly came out and said that he has not heard from Golden Knight management regarding him coming back to Vegas as a Golden Knight. Probably not the thing you want if you're, you know, for a guy that's, he's like the last one left of the originals, a 40 goal scorer, Tommy, right? Playoff MVP, and you can't even get a phone call from your former team.
I think you kind of alluded to that. I know you sent me a text to it, and I think you said it on the air where you were, what are we doing here? You know, kind of, it doesn't shock you, we'll say, that this is kind of how they're doing business. And I'm not telling you guys it's right or wrong, but I will tell you, I don't think it's going to shock, I don't think it's shocking, Tim, that this is how things are going.
No, it's business as usual for Vegas Golden Knights ownership, right, Tom? If the Marc-Andre Fleury was the first time that we saw this happen in this franchise's seven-year run, was when that they made the decision to let him go. Did it hurt the Golden Knights, Tom? No, they won a Stanley Cup after him. So just because it doesn't please the fan base doesn't mean hockey wise it's not the right call. He is older when you talk about NHL players, and he's veteran status. He's on the other side of the dreaded number that you say, what is it, in your, when you're getting your mid-30s, that's you're already past your prime. So, and regardless of what he's done the last 2 years, it's wonderful, and they won a title with him. But at what he's wanting or expecting to get for this last contract, he's probably his last contract as an NHL player, a big one. He wants to get paid. It may not fit into the dollars and cents, because we've talked about this year after year, Vegas plays that cap right up to the very last penny, Tommy, and there just may not be enough room to bring him in. I mean, that's just what it's going to come down to.
And how are the fans going to react to that, Tim?
Well, they're going to be pissed off. But once the season starts, what is anybody going to say at that point, Tom? Right?
Well, listen, I think we talked about it, right? I mean, I think we touched on this, and I said, I don't see him coming back.
Yeah, no, I agree. Somebody will pay him what he wants. That's the thing about, teams with money. Chicago Blackhawks have, Detroit Red Wings have plenty of cap space to bring in a veteran like that for a young team. I mean, it kind of makes sense if you really break down the science behind it, and that's nothing against the Golden Knights. I mean, you wanted Mark Stone long-term, you got him, right? You wanted Jack Eichel long-term, you got him, but there comes a price with that, and unfortunately, it's probably going to be Jonathan Marchessault.
And I don't think that's, something to cry over.
No.
Look, take away the emotional attachment. Something has to be done, like you said. This is a tough decision. He's not getting a hometown discount. He's not giving them one. And I think we just got to kind of accept that. It might sting. It stings your fandom, but it doesn't sting on an intellectual level if you're breaking it down. When we talked about this, when the season ended, and I had people in the media, buddies of ours, write me and say, oh, come on, you just don't get the vibe of how much Vegas likes it. We'll see, right? I mean, we'll see. I thought Vegas really liked Flower too, right? I mean, it's tough business decisions, but they're making them.
He's actually one of the few Knights I don't mind, and even though he's very passionate, right, Tom? He's very chippy. He kind of says what's on his mind, and I appreciate that as a person, that's how he's feeling. I remember when they were eliminating the playoffs, and he just went completely nuts on a reporter for asking stupid questions, which I appreciate. Being in the media, I sit in a media room sometimes, and I'm just befuddled by some of the idiotic questions I see supposedly my brethren out there speaking. And you know what? You don't ask questions like that after there's a lot of emotion coming out after a tough loss in the playoffs. You know your season's over and you have to deal with stuff like that. So I get it. And I've always thought he spoke his mind, which you can't not like that. I mean, that's who he is. And you know what? Maybe this week or maybe next week, Tom, they find a way to fit him in. Maybe he gives him a big hometown discount because he wants to stay. But just from seeing this happen in other cities with other star players, it just there has to be an end somewhere. And unfortunately, the odds are going to say that he won't come next season. But maybe I'm wrong.
No, I think you're 100% right. You know, I don't see him here. I think the fans will be annoyed, but they'll understand. They're smart enough to understand you can't have the highest paid players at every position every year and expect long-term success.
Right. Eventually it has to bite you somewhere. But the way that they've been doing it, I'll say this, I by no means, Tom, do I consider myself a Knights fan, but I will say this, their way of manipulating the salary cap, right? They use the rules the way that they're set up. Their way of always going out to win. They remind me a lot of the Yankees in that they will do what they have to do to make sure they're in a position that they can win the ultimate prize, which is the title. And you have to appreciate that as a fan. I just think our fans are spoiled, right, Tom? Because they haven't had the years like we've had with some of our teams where the losing end of it. They've missed the playoffs one time in 7 years and barely missed it at that. They've been to 2 Stanley Cup finals. They've won a cup. That's crazy for a franchise in that short of existence. But you know, they put the gas, they floor it. They don't want to be non-relevant, Tommy. And what, unfortunately, how long can you play the numbers game before it catches up to you? And we'll see here in the next couple of years.
Well, we're going to see. But, you know, we always ask, would you trade a cup, you know, or trade a championship for 10 years of mediocrity and then every 10 years bounce back? And almost every fan base you ever talk to, ever, every smart fan base goes, yeah, give me the championship, right? Yeah. Give me that one championship. I'll suck for 10 years. Give me a championship every 10 years, every 12 years even. It doesn't matter. So I can't disagree with what they're doing.
I don't think there is no other answer than yes, you would, right? There is no, I wouldn't do that.
Oh, there are people. Oh, there are. I've had the argument, Tim. I've had the argument on the air. People going, no, I just want to be very good for, you know, forever. I don't like being, you know, the terrible team. Really? Okay.
But getting that first one is magical. But once you get a taste of it, right, Tom? Now you want it all the time. So you're going to trade in 10 years of bad to get another one? Absolutely.
I'd do it tomorrow.
All right, real quick, Tom, the NBA. I know you went over a lot of this last night on the show, but in case anybody wasn't listening and they're tuned into the Super Sunday Night Edition, we got Celtics, Mavericks. You know, the funny thing we joke about all the time is I always throw it out there that I don't watch the NBA anymore. This will be year number 4 coming up after this season. It'll be the fourth year that I don't watch the NBA anymore. It's just not for me. But what's crazy is 2 years ago, was it 2 years ago? When were the Celtics in the finals? Was it last year or the year before that?
2 years ago, yeah.
2 years ago, they played Golden State, and I was like, dang, man. I'm a Celtics fan, and they're in the finals, and I don't even care. Now, they're back in the finals, Tommy. And my second favorite team growing up was the Mavericks. So I'm just like, really, this is what it's going to be, huh? Celtics, Mavericks for the title, Tom. Your thoughts?
Well, what I was talking about last night is I'm going to kind of tell you, Tim, you might want to watch this one. I think for fringe NBA fans, this is going to remind them a lot of what you grew up loving. And I'm not telling you that, you know, we're going to see that great defense or any of that. Look, the NBA is soft. People in the NBA are soft. They're soft players. It's a soft league, soft fan base. Everything's soft. It's a softer version. But the storylines are there, Tim, to get you to come back. And here are the storylines. You have a distinct underdog that almost had to play a play-in game up against the 64-win 14-game lead in the East, Dynamo, that's gone 12-2 in the playoffs. Okay, that itself is a storyline. Then you have 25-year-old or mid-20-year-olds, Jason Tatum, top 5 player in the league, Luka Doncic, top 5 player in the league. They're going head-to-head. You have the Kyrie Irving story, you know, kind of a resurgence at 32 years old. You have the conversation of, is Luka trying to carve out best of all time? And, well, if he beats Jason Tatum, I think we start having to have a conversation about him being the best right now, if there isn't already one. You are going to have a number 3 ranked defense in Boston up against the offense of trying to shut down maybe the best offensive player in the game in Luka. There are storylines, Tim, that are reminiscent of the great storylines that we remember with the NBA before you tuned it out. And I can't convince you to come back and tell you it's going to be a great series. I can't convince you and tell you to come back, and I promise it's going to be better than it has been, because I'm not sure. But I can promise this. The storylines are certainly there for Tim to tune in, and you casual NBA fans, maybe guys that walked away a year or two ago because of the boring style and just the league spiraling downhill. If you want to come back, this is the year to come back. Don't come back when LeBron's dragging his, you know, 85-year-old body up and down the court, crying about fouls. You know what you're going to get. Don't come back when Golden State's just launching everything from three-point land and it's just a game that you don't know. No, Boston and Dallas in this series is for the old-school NBA fan.
Tommy, you're saying my two favorite teams growing up are going to bring me back to the National Basketball Association.
I think they can.
What does it do for the league itself? TV-wise, fan-wise? Is this a series people want to see? Is it marketable to what is good for the sport? Is it just something that you and I will enjoy, Ronnie will enjoy because we're fans of 80s and 90s basketball? When you look at the matchup, is this what the NBA wanted?
Outside of balding old man LeBron trying to push nepotism into the NBA with his son, outside of that, this is the best matchup to this that the NBA could ask for. They want the Celtics, big market. Yeah, the Knicks would have been great, but more marketable teams in Boston. Boston against at Lakers, you're never going to beat that. Okay, take out the Lakers. Who's the next best team? And I went over this a little bit last time. There isn't one. The Suns are a better team, sure, but they don't have Luka. The Denver Nuggets are a great team with a three-time MVP, but he doesn't have the lightning rod effect of Luka. This is the next superstar. If he's not already there at 25, the next great superstar against potentially the next great team and easily the best team overall this year. So you look at that and you go, no, the NBA is getting everything. Dallas is a big market. Boston's a big market, big name players, young players. This is the formula that advertisers and the NBA commissioner are just drooling over.
I'm going to do this, Tom Barton, because it's my two teams, because you're saying that you think this can make me come back to the sport. Thursday night, 5:30 Pacific time on ABC, I will be tuned in to game one of the NBA Finals. It's not that I don't keep track of the
Maybe just watch
standings.
the second half then.
The second, okay. Just
It's hard
jump
to
in
get through
when
an
you.
NBA game nowadays. Yeah, you'll be tuned out.
Well, I'm going to do it. I'm going to try this again. I was on the verge when the Warriors and the Celtics played a couple years ago, and I just didn't do it, and I don't think I missed anything. But I'm going to do this. This is retro. This is old school. It reminds me of, I told Ron the other day, we were talking to Ron about something, and I side chatted with him. And growing up, I loved the Mavericks in the West, and the Lakers always found a way to screw them out of going to the finals, right, Tom? Whether it be some mysterious phantom Angel Hernandez calls on the court. I was denied a Boston Dallas NBA final in the late 80s. I finally get it. So I think I deserve, just at least for old time's sakes, to tune into this series.
I'm glad you're going to. I want to see your reaction because you haven't watched it in a little while. See your reaction to what the game has developed into, and the Tatum Luka matchup. Is it big enough to kind of keep your attention?
Who wins this series, Tom, and in how many games?
Celtics in five, and that's why I said I can't promise a good series. Yeah, I just can't. The Celtics are more talented. While Dallas might have the best player on the court, the Celtics have the second, third, fifth, and sixth. Their depth is there. I think the Celtics are just the clear better team. The Boston Celtics are dynamic at home, but they've also won eight straight road games. I would love this to be a seven-game series back in Boston. Let's see that kind of dynamic series play out, but I can't get myself there. I don't even think I could get myself to six. I mean, if you want to tell me six, sure. I stopped very short last night of calling for a four-game sweep. I stopped very short because I respect Luka so much that I think there's going to be one game where he just goes nuts. One game where Luka does something like, 35, 40 points, 15, 20 boards, 10 assists. I mean, he's just going to go nuts and take over. So I'll give them one game where Luka goes crazy. But you have the number one offense in the league against the number 10 offensive in the league. Oh, by the way, but the number three defense. Boston is just better. The only argument you have with Dallas, actually, there's two. The Luka factor, of course. The other argument is, well, the East was weak. Okay.
Yeah.
Granted, I get it. I don't think it's nearly as weak as people made it out to be. Boston in five.
Boston going for their 18th NBA championship. And do you think when you sum it up, Tom, you really look at the storyline built into it. this is the arc that this team is, this franchise has been on, right? When Brad Stevens was brought in from Butler as the coach, it was the beginning of what we're witnessing now. And even though he's not the coach anymore, Tom, he is, what is he, the GM or the player personnel guy? He's, this is all directly involves Brad Stevens still. So this is the payoff of the storyline. We talk about the wrestling terms, right? This is the storyline, Tom. This is it. This is the arc ends in this series, right? They get their title.
They almost have to. There are certain times where you look at teams and their development, like you said, the arc. I love how you use that. And you go, it's just their time, right? I mean, it's just their time. This is just Boston's time. They've gotten close. They've had good teams. There's never been a discrepancy as big as this. Boston's path to a title goes through one man. Boston with your number three defense in the entire NBA. Shut down Luka and you win it. That's it. Shut down Luka. The championship is in Boston. A lot easier said than done. I get it. But that's the reality. You're playing against one man. Kyrie's good. Okay? He can score, but he's not what he once was. And after that, it gets barren wasteland for Dallas.
When you say shut down Luka, is that mean keep him under 30?
I said last night, if you allow Luka and Kyrie to go off Tim for 55 every night, you still got to get what, 50 points somewhere.
Yeah.
Where are they finding those 50 points? I mean, that's the thing. If you shut down Tatum, you have Brown. You shut down Tatum and Brown, okay, White's going to be there. Maybe Porzingis gets healthy for the playoffs. Al Horford's averaging 10 points a game. He could get to 15 or 20. I mean, Boston comes at you so many ways. If you just say to Luka, okay, Luka, we're going to give you 40 tonight, but the rest of the team's only going to score 40. I mean, that's the kind of Boston mentality. Or you go, hey, you guys, go ahead, Kyrie and Luka, you guys go crazy. You get your 55, even 60 points. But the mid-range guys that can't, you know, they're not even averaging double digits scoring. They're doing nothing tonight. They're doing nothing. So you two could score 60. The rest of your team's going to score 40, and we're going to win this game.
Tommy likes Boston in 5, and Tommy likes Edmonton in 7, correct?
Oh, man, I didn't say anything with Edmonton. Whoa. No, I don't think Edmonton can win a game 7 in Florida. No, okay. I don't.
But that's where superstars come to play, Tom. Superstars come up.
If Edmonton wins it, it's going to be in 6. Edmonton will win it in 6 if they're going to win it. I picked Edmonton before the year. My heart's with Edmonton, but I just look from a betting perspective. Let me give a little PSA. From a betting perspective, I got to be on Florida Panthers. I'm not touching it, but I would be on them. But from a fun perspective, okay, let's do it. Connor McDavid, game 7 overtime winner. Called it. Assist by Draisaitl.
Again, it's almost Tatum Brown, like the two guys that have been the backbone of your franchise come to play big when it's time to finally get that coveted trophy, right, Tommy?
Yeah, I mean, that's what it is right now. We couldn't be crowning a champion in, you know, a week and a half or so. Two times from talking to you. In 2 weeks, 2 Sunday nights from now, we could be crowning champions, Connor McDavid and Jason Tatum. I mean, here we go. NBA and NHL, you get everything that you wanted.
That's the voice of Tom Barton. I'm Tim Unglesby. We're going to step aside for a quick few minutes when we come back. I wanted to talk just a shade of NFL football with Tommy as we get to the end of the first hour here on a Super Sunday night at T-Wave Sports, Fox Sports Radio.
Be a part of the show, 876-1340, or text Fox to 69187 and your message. This is Heatwave Sports on Fox Sports 1340.
876-1340, the Heatwave Hotline, at Tom Barton Sports, at HW Sports over on the X. You can always get a hold of us there. And Tom, during one of the weeks we weren't on because of whatever programming situation that happened upon us. We didn't really get to talk about the end of schedule, NFL schedule being released. And I just kind of want to focus in on week one because we are, it's June 2nd here. It's June 3rd on the East Coast. Season week one officially kicks off September 5th. So we're in the 3-month window now, Tommy, and it'll be here before you know it. So I kind of wanted to get your thoughts on some of the lines from the opening week, some of the matchups. And there will be two games played before our usual Sunday slate. There's a game Thursday night on NBC, AFC Championship matchup, Tom. Baltimore will be at Kansas City, the now 2-time defending Super Bowl champions. And, Tom, this line is Kansas City 2.5, over-under is 46.5.
I very well may be sitting next to you for that one. Look, I had a conversation with my buddy who's a huge Chiefs fan, and there's really kind of the separation this year in the AFC. I think the Bills lost a lot. The Jets are still the Jets, although dangerous, they're still the Jets. Miami lost a lot on defense. Burrow, we don't know what his situation is. I'm not worried about Cleveland. Looks like the Texans are a year early, and it looks like it's Ravens-Chiefs. I mean, this is what it looks like. It's kind of coming to a head. The Ravens get Derrick Henry, but they did lose a little bit on defense. The Chiefs lost some, but they also got, you know, Hollywood Brown. I think this is perfect. This is a perfect opening day game. This is a perfect spread, right about 2.5 or 3. You can get 3 at FanDuel here. Right around 2.5 or 3. 46.5 is the number. It's exactly what my numbers have, Tim. I had exactly this point spread. So I don't like it. I'm not going near it. But I think it's one of those spots where the world is going to go, how can you bet against the Chiefs at home? But what we've watched with Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid, not quite the Belichick formula, but they don't always come out of the gate on fire. And I think for the Ravens, this game means more. The Chiefs could lose this game, no problem. We know what we're going to do. We'll fix things and come back. The Ravens, this kind of means more. They need to almost win this game. I'm looking at the points in here, Tim, and I'm looking at your Ravens and saying, look, somebody's handing me a $300 to go bet this game. I'll take the Ravens.
I don't want to say it's a revenge game necessarily, but it is, right, Tom? And what was the thing that you and I were both yelling and screaming at the TV about in late January was, why aren't they running the ball? Run the ball. Well, now you have a running back that you don't have an option. You better run the ball. And that's a guy you don't mind running. So I think take the fandom out of it. I'm with you on the analysis is that this game, although it really doesn't mean anything, it does mean something. And if you're going to give me a field goal and with probably the top two teams in the AFC, I think you got to kind of lean with the points here. Or the points, excuse me.
Look, they lost week one last year, right, against Detroit. I had Detroit. I was happy about that one. They lost that one. 2021, they beat Cleveland at home by only 4. You know, so there's precedent there that maybe you can't bet against Cleveland. I mean, I'm sorry, Kansas City, maybe. But the 3 points could come into play there. One of the few times where I usually say, hey, if it's under a 2.5-point spread, you don't buy it. But hey, listen, I'll take the 3 with the Ravens. Shop around and you can get it.
And it's a showcase game, right, Tom? NBC, week one, back-to-back champs. Taylor Swift's going to be there. You know, it's the same thing that we just came out of. It's just took a few months off, and we're going to go right back into it. All the attention is on
Harrison
Kansas
City. Bunker's going to be there, baby.
Yes, what is that, the highest selling jersey in Chief history now, right?
Oh yeah, Abby said she wants one of those jerseys. I'm gonna get her one. I might be sitting next to you, you rooting on the Ravens, me rooting on just nothing but field goals.
Well, that's the thing. It's all about Kansas City, which I think if you're looking for value, would I like 4? 100%, right, Tom? But you're not getting 4 in this game. You're gonna get 3. That's the best you're gonna get.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll take it. You know what I mean? I'll take it. That's okay. Give me the 3. As of right now, give me the 3.
So I guess there's a Friday game as well, Tom, and it's going to be in Brazil, of all places. Packers, Eagles. The opening line is Eagles 1.5. I don't even know how you handicap this first week of the season, and you're all way across the world.
You don't. You just don't. I mean, you don't go anywhere near this. It's a one-point game. Everybody, I will say this. Everybody's loving on the Packers. I mean, loving the Packers. This is not coming from a Chicago Bears fan, guys. This is coming from a reality standpoint. Early in the season, it wouldn't shock me if the Packers struggled. It's not that they can't be good. It's that they're going with a rotation of three different tight ends where they didn't have two of them even in the lineup for most of the games last year. Now they got to kind of figure that out. Their wide receivers are very dynamic and very young. But they really didn't all kind of play together last year. Aaron Jones was their guy to just say, okay, wait a minute, we're in trouble. Aaron Jones is the guy. Yeah, Jacobs is good, but Aaron Jones did some certain things. There's a lot of moving parts with the Packers. Where the Eagles come in, well-oiled machine, they know what they're doing, same sort of training camp, same sort of key players in a lot of areas. But even with the Eagles, you go, hey, they lost some key offensive linemen. I don't know. I don't go near this one. Too many moving parts with Green Bay. Enough moving parts with the Eagles. It makes me pause.
Tom, if you're interested in going to this game, you can get a ticket via the StubHub right now for as low as $1,173.
Yeah, or I could sit at home and we'll sit next to you in a sports book and yeah, you know, drink a couple of beers and enjoy. I could do that,
yes,
too.
Yes. Other games of note that I circled. How about the Tennessee Titans at the Chicago Bears? It'll be the debut of Caleb Williams, the number one overall pick in the draft. Mr. Barton, your Bears are 4.5-point favorites in week one.
I'm not touching this at all. The Titans are just very, you know, very well coached traditionally. There's a lot of change there, though. Complete change in the offensive philosophy, complete change in everything. Look, I think the Bears win the game. I do. Forget about all of the offensive additions, which are massive. The Bears' defense last year was fantastic, and people don't realize how good they were. I think that they're able to stop the Titans early in the season, are going to a completely new philosophy of throwing the ball downfield. But I do worry a little bit laying 4.5 points. I look at this and you go, okay, Bears are laying 4.5 points, but the total is only 43. That means they know the Bears defense is probably going to lead the way here. If anything, I'm kind of leaning the under.
Two veteran quarterbacks in new cities for the 2024 season, Pittsburgh at Atlanta. So we got Russell Wilson, Tom, versus Kirk Cousins. Falcons are a 3-point favorite at home.
Falcons make a lot of sense, but Cousins with a new offense. It's going to be interesting to see what the Steelers do. I said this last night, Tim. You know I'm really in-depth with those Pittsburgh guys. They all believe Brandon Ayuk or Deebo Samuel's coming to Pittsburgh. That could change things.
Yeah. Raider fans start the year on the road at the Chargers, so we get a nice rivalry matchup in week number one. Is it Aiden O'Connell? Is it Gardner Minshew against Justin Herbert and his rebuilt receiving core? Chargers 3.5 on their home field.
No, the quarterbacks aren't even going to matter in this game. This is one of my favorite unders of the preseason here so far. Look, Harbaugh told everybody, I'm going to run the football. Then during the draft, he said, oh, by the way, offensive line, everybody thought he was going to take a receiver. Nope, going to run the football. Then he let go of his offensive wide receivers. Didn't really pick anybody up. Why? Because I'm going to run the football. And the Raiders said, look, we think we're going to run the football too and play defense. We don't need a quarterback. And people said, nah, they're going to go get a quarterback. Nope, they didn't. Both of these teams are perfectly okay with a 17-14 score.
How about the Houston Texans and the run they went on? Qualify for the playoffs last year. They'll be at Indianapolis. I'm assuming it'll be Anthony Richardson for the Colts. Houston, a 2-point favorite on the road.
Division road favorite for a guy making his sophomore debut. New receivers, new pieces. And lame points. I don't know. Look, I know the world thinks the Texans are going to the Super Bowl, and they looked good. The defense looked good. You got to like Diggs being there, sure. I am not laying points an opening day in division with a rookie or a young quarterback. I can't do it.
Right. Stafford versus Goff, Tom. Rams at the Lions. Lions looking to rebound after that catastrophe in the NFC title game, blowing up that lead to the 49ers. This will be the Sunday nighter, and it's the Lions 3.5 at Ford Field.
I am very, very, very close to having the Lions be the Super Bowl team in the NFC early on here. I like everything the Lions do. But the Rams did get some real talented defensive players, two kids from Florida State in the first and second round in versus Fisk. The Rams still have Cooper Kupp and a dynamic offense. When Stafford's healthy, he's hard to beat, and he's going back home. 51. This might be 71 if you really break it down, right? I mean, they might just be airing it out all day.
And the Monday nighter in Frisco. Niners come up short in the Super Bowl, Tom. They'll open the season at home. 5.5-point favorites against Aaron Rodgers, Tommy, and the New York Jets.
Oh, my goodness. You're going to make me do it. J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets. Look, the Niners are a dynamic team, well-oiled machine and all that. The Jets' defense is for real. And Breece Hall is for real. And Wilson's for real. And this Jets team is for real. Now, I think Robert Saleh is a terrible coach. Okay, but he is going back to San Francisco, so maybe there's a little juice there. And Aaron Rodgers, while we all, you guys have all kind of come onto my bandwagon of this guy's a knucklehead, he still has a lot of pride left. I think he goes out and I think he plays really well. He's from kind of, that area. There's just a lot of secondary. If this is a pick 'em game, Niners probably pull it out. But you're giving me 5.5 with the Jets? Yeah, I'll be on the 5.5.
Those are just some of the games I highlighted, Tommy, that I thought be interesting. I know we're 90 days away. Anything can happen, but again, it's the NFL, and it's never too early to talk about the NFL, right? So let's go ahead and take the top of the hour timeout. Hour two on the way, Major League Baseball. But when we come back, we'll talk about this Caitlin Clark person and what's going on in the WNBA as it's hitting mainstream media right now. Tim Unglesby, Tom Barton, and Angel with you here on a Super Sunday night as Heat Wave Sports on Fox Sports Radio.
Back for hour now back to Heat Wave Sports with Tim Unglesby and Tom Barton.
Yep, back at it. Hour number two. Tim Unglesby, Tom Barton, Heat Wave Sports. Tom, we're going to do some Major League Baseball, but obviously you're well aware of the Caitlin Clark situation that unfolded this weekend, and just want to get your thoughts on it because it's just actually taken mainstream media by storm now, and a lot of political implications being thrown around in this whole story.
Yeah, there is, and the nature of the world that we live in now, everything is politicized because everything is politicized, right? I mean, it really is. It is amazing where, they say they're eating their own, and that's what's going on here. Caitlin Clark comes over with all the fervor that she could possibly have, giving more attention to women's basketball than anyone ever, period, full stop. And they are, I don't even want to say bullying, because what they're doing is illegal. They are jealous of her. They are mistreating her, and the speculation is why. Why would she, if she elevates the league, everybody gets paid more money. If more people are watching, everybody gets paid more money. If more people care, everybody gets paid more money. Advertisers care. Everybody gets paid more money. So the jealousy that's going on is ignorant jealousy, because you might not like her, but she's going to bring in more money. She's going to bring more attention to your sport, what you've been begging for forever. Begging people, hey, why do we not get paid enough? Well, because nobody cares about your sport. Nobody's watching your sport. And when people do finally start to pay attention to it, this is how you treat your superstar? This is how you're going to do it. Illegal shots, trash talking, horrible, horrible things. Why? Well, now we get into the political aspect. And the speculation is, well, why? Well, you know, she's not exactly fitting in the league that they want. The woman that just got, you know, into a, you know, altercation with her has already had a track record. You know, she's the Draymond Green, we'll say, of the WNBA. What are you doing? You know, I didn't necessarily agree with the treatment that Michael Jordan got in the 90s, where basically you couldn't touch him. But I understood it, right? I mean, I understood the marketing of it. I understood the marketing aspect. Why would you allow that guy to get hurt? I don't agree with the NFL. Basically, you can't wipe a feather on an NFL quarterback without getting hurt. But I get it. These guys sell the tickets. They're the big names. They're the big advertisers. I get it. Well, Caitlin Clark doesn't need to be that level. But guess what? She should be the level of everybody else. And they are allowing her to be beaten down, to be disrespected on the court. They are allowing her to be the one that is pushed around and taking cheap shots. Why? Why is it all against her? And that's where the political aspect comes in here, Tim, because the speculation starts. The speculation starts from, is it the color of her skin? Is it her sexuality choice? Is it everything else? That's where the speculation goes. It's not me saying it. Look, I don't watch the WNBA. This is what you see out there. The speculation, whether it be there or not, I think it's more jealousy than it is the color of her skin. I think it's more jealousy than it is her sexual orientation. I think it's more jealousy than anything else. But whatever it is, we saw it in college, right? Reese from LSU isn't half the player that Caitlin Clark is. But she's taunting her and getting in her face. And everybody's kind of, oh, well, that's okay. Well, that's okay. I'm not telling you that Caitlin Clark is an angel here. But it's quite obvious to everybody exactly what's happening, Tim. And it's just disrespecting their own sport, and it's shooting yourself in the foot or cutting your nose off to spite your face, whatever terminology you might want to use. They're hurting themselves in the process.
I agree 100% with what you're saying. And for someone who covers the league and has for a very long time, you said it best, shooting yourself in the foot, cutting your nose off to spite your face. It's, how can you be so ridiculously unintelligent to want to put not only the not the team, Tom, not the player itself, but the league in this situation where it doesn't matter who it is. You're bringing in somebody in the league that's creating opportunity for the league to be seen by more eyes, right? The league has been on a slow, steady upgrade the last, I want to say, 3-4 years, right? And now you're injecting it with a shot of adrenaline again to keep pushing it up and up. You know, ultimately the goal is, hey, maybe one day the WNBA can make money, right, Tom? Not be in debt every season. And this is the route you're going to go, but you're going to allow this to happen in your league. And this is where the problem with the WNBA and at least in my thought process over the years has been, is that they're inept. It's run by people that don't know what they're doing. They don't know business model. When the WNBA was run by the NBA, at least then there was a business model that they could use. The WNBA just gave up, in fact, or the NBA gave up in that they didn't want to subsidize it anymore. Tom is losing too much money. So they've just kind of floundered around. And yes, there is some subsidization from the league as a whole. But, you know, when you had the NBA team owners putting their own money into it, it was a different situation. And probably best that they're not involved, because I don't think they have the patience for it to develop. So you're starting to see some development, right? You're starting to get a new young group of females in there that are bringing eyes to the sport. And you do this, you allow things like this to happen. And if you don't know what happened, right, Tom, essentially, Kennedy Carter of the Chicago Sky, on a dead ball, just went up and basically, they're saying assault, right, Tom? She bumped into her, pushed her down, whatever you want to call it, Caitlin Carter. And they called an away the ball foul, which had now has been bumped up, but the league bumped it to a flagrant one. But like, why is that happening? Because she was, because Caitlin Carter was talking trash to you the week, the previous trip down the floor. That's what you're going to do. We don't need the bullying, like you said, Tom, because that's what it is. We don't need, you want to say that the rookies have to earn their stripes, whatever, but this is not the way you're going to do it. So you're basically crapping on somebody that's going to open up this league to so much more endorsements and eyes and TV ratings and everything else you want to call it. And they allow this to happen. I don't know what happened to the Chicago Sky as a franchise, Tom. And I did an article with Rob Meach a couple years ago about Chicago. The team that they had that won a championship in this league with the Vandersloots and the Clay Coppers. I forget her name. She played for the I'm being old now. She played with the Aces here most recently. Well-known player, right, Tom? She won multiple championships, and I can't remember her name. But the route that they've gone, and now they have Angel Reese, like you said as well, somebody who has a collegiate rivalry with Caitlin Clark that's going to jump off the bench and give Kennedy Carter a hug and clap that she would do something like that. Totally the wrong kind of impression you want to give to mainstream media, Tommy.
Yeah, it is. Look, from the casuals, you have watched, the WNBA way, way, way more than I have. I've given it a chance, but I will tell you what, look, I was one of those guys that I jumped on the Caitlin Clark bandwagon, right? I jumped on that and the Angel Reese arguments and that whole fever. And I jumped on this year and I said, I'm going to watch a little bit of that. It got me, Tim. It got me to go, I want to see some. I want to see some of this. What did I see? You know, I saw a Draymond Green type of situation. But my question is, why is nothing being done about it, Tim?
Yeah.
You know, it's obvious what's happening. These girls, these women are jealous. Okay. They don't like her for popularity, for the way that she got promoted in the game. They don't like her for potentially other reasons, like I've mentioned, including certainly where everybody wants to point to. Yeah, I get it. They don't like her. And that's fine. But where is her coaches? Where are the other coaches? Where are the other teammates? Where's the league stopping this?
I don't think they know how to handle it. That's what I'm talking about. The league is ineptly run at the top. I don't think they don't know what to do. They don't want to make a decision and have it, quote unquote, Tommy, backfire politically in front of them. And I think that's the wrong precedent here. You can't allow this to happen. And this isn't the only thing, right, Tommy? We're talking, this season is, what, 10, 12 games in, and she's been battered the whole time. So if you want to say, like I said, initiation, welcome to the league, rookie, you got to take your bumps, whatever. But stuff like this, that would never happen in the NBA, Tom, without there being some type of a severe punishment, correct? Off the ball, basically you're just throwing somebody down on the ground. It's not even a basketball play. Caitlin Clark said it best in the interview. She took the high road on it. It wasn't a basketball play that had happened. And I just don't think they know what to do. That's the problem. They're not used to this. They've never had a problem like this. But they need to fix it. And I don't know what the answer is for them, but they need to fix it.
Well, I'll tell you what. It's not just us. Former NBA player Matt Barnes, you know, is one of the stand-ups. And he brought out exactly what I'm kind of saying. Where's Caitlin Clark's teammates? Look, this isn't hockey. You don't have, you know, the goon out there, right, to fight your battles. But where are they? They're smirking. They're laughing at her. Tim, you know, where are her teammates? Where are they? With these bumps and these blocks. There was a play, I don't know who they were playing. Oh, boy. They were playing a light blue team, Indiana. I'm trying to think. And she comes over. She wrecks her. I mean, Caitlin Clark just standing there, just gets wrecked. Totally, you know, trashed. And the woman who's inbounding the ball casually walks past it. And just picks up Caitlin Clark. Where is the pushing? Where is the shoving? Where is the you don't touch my star? Where's that?
Yeah.
Where is that?
WNBA players.
And I'm
going
to say this, Tim, to put this in a bad perspective, let me ask you the question, Tim, because this is where this is gone. For right or for wrong, this is where it's gone. And everyone's going to with the racial aspect. Tim, if this treatment was happening to a black NBA player by white players, would we be having a different conversation?
Of course. Of course.
Right.
And the WNBA, every year the players talk about we need to be paid more, we need to do the same treatment that the NBA players get, on and on, right? For a league that historically has been in debt. But yet, when things like this happen, when the popularity grows and you want equal treatment, right, Tom? Where is the equal treatment by players? If that happens in the NBA, black or white, whatever you want to call it, it doesn't matter. If that your teammate is coming to your rescue, somebody's getting technical foul, right, Tom? Somebody's getting thrown out of a game because it's a teammate situation. You just don't, it doesn't matter what the color of your skin is at that point. You're just defending your teammate, and you're right. That's the play we were talking about, Kennedy Carter. Her teammate didn't. First thing I would have done was been right in her face. That would have been me defending my teammate, but she didn't. And I don't think they get it, Tom. That's the problem. And the league, here's the thing with Chicago too. And that's the team you're talking about. So in the press conference, they asked Kennedy Carter about the play. Her response was next question, right? And then goes on Twitter and says something to the effect of, who's Caitlin Clark anyway, somebody who can shoot threes? Just completely making light of the situation itself. Angel Reese, her teammate, the one we were talking about, the rivalry and giving her a hug and clapping about doing what she's doing, doesn't even show up to the press conference. And what does the league do, Tom? They give these pity-patty fines to the players for failing to meet obligations to the media. And then they fine the team pennies for not making sure that the policies are followed. You have to set an example somewhere. And if you don't, it's going to continue, Tom, because what happened here? Nothing happened. There was no punishment. She didn't get suspended. It's going to happen again. Trust me, and then it's just going to get worse, and these are things you don't want to see. That's not the attention this league needs.
Indiana needs to go out tomorrow, drop the last person on their bench, go get an enforcer. And your job, we're going to pay you well. And your job is to make sure the golden goose, as Chris Wynn said, right? The golden goose doesn't get touched. And you go out there, and that's what you need to do. Look, we've seen it happen before in the NBA, right? We've watched it. Matt Barnes said he was basically that guy for Kobe, right? You know your role, and that's fine. You're a professional WNBA player. You're going to get paid. Don't let them touch her. And especially this Angel Reese, hooping and hollering, and she's celebrating her going down. You know, you are so jealous and so petty and so little. That's what you want. You're little. You're a nobody. And then Kennedy saying, you know, oh, I'm not going to answer any questions. The only reason anybody knows who you are is because of Caitlin Clark. You're a nobody. Right. The only reason anybody wants to talk to you is because of Caitlin Clark. Come on.
You're not in the press conference because you're a WNBA All-Star. You're in the press conference because you did something foolish out of hatred or stupidity or both. That's the only, like you said, that's the only reason we want to talk to you, or else you're not here. Angel Reese, Tom, I don't know if you know the backstory on this, doesn't have a problem speaking her mind, which is fine, but throws the race card around, basically called her coach in college racist, had problems last year in her senior year at LSU, missed time because of, I don't know what the team described it as, something privately. There was a problem within the team itself, and that's what they used as the reason for it. But doesn't get along well with others, that type of situation. So the last thing the WNBA needs is that quote-unquote Tommy Thug mentality, right?
Yeah, it's going to turn away people that you finally started, after all these years, a failing, fledgling league because of poor play and no interest, finally get somebody that is playing well and has a lot of interest, and somebody's innate jealousy. Angel Reese is going to bring this down. Come on. What are you doing? What, NBA, WNBA, what are you doing? And you know what? And I had a Freudian slip there saying NBA, because the NBA should step in, because they have a lot of commitment to that. The NBA should step in and say, okay, here we go. This is how we handle it. This is how you guys need to handle it. Because I can guarantee you, if that was Jason Tatum, this wouldn't be going on. If that was a guy like even LeBron at his age, this wouldn't be going on. If this was an up-and-coming star, if this was Luka, this wouldn't be going on. So take it from the league that has had success. They protected MJ. I'm not saying Caitlin Clark's MJ, but they're protecting the asset. But right now, Tim, what are we doing? We're talking about the NBA, WNBA, and people that may have said, you know what, I'm going to give her a shot. They don't want to watch that. And they're going to tune out, tune off, and then we're going to hear in another 5 years women saying, well, why aren't we paid like the men's league? Because you had one golden goose, and this is what you did to her.
You're not a WNBA fan, Tom, but like you said, you piqued your interest to see what was going on with her when she all-time leading college basketball scorer, gets drafted in WNBA. There's a lot of attention on it. Piqued your interest. My daughter's grandfather, essentially my father-in-law, he started watching it, Tommy. He started keeping track of what Caitlin Clark was doing. And then the first thing, this was before this happened. So this happened yesterday. Before this happened, he would come over to the house and he'd say to me, yeah, you know, I'm really getting into watching Caitlin Clark games, but they beat her up a lot. They don't call fouls where they need to be called. She's getting punished. And then this happens. And so he texts me. He's like, what the hell's going on? That's exactly what you just said, is you're going to lose any new fans that you've gained if you don't do something about this, because nobody wants to see that. And whether you want to call it a back-to-back or not was the case, I'm pretty sure all this negative publicity eventually eats into your psyche, Tom. She had her worst game as a professional today against the New York Liberty. She scored 3 points, terrible shooting, and they lost by, what was it, 40 plus, almost 40 points, Tom, they lost to. 40-point loss. They scored 68 points today in a basketball game. So you can have excuses all you want, but you're going to tell me that didn't play into her mindset. I'll tell you you're wrong.
Well, and not only that, Tim, they're celebrating. Think about the mentality of these morons celebrating that she has a bad game. And if Caitlin Clark fizzles out, and she's not that great, you think you're gaining? You think you're going to gain people or lose people? If Caitlin Clark goes down with an injury and she can't play the rest of the year, are you gaining fans or are you losing fans? It's just a moronic, selfish, idiotic view.
That's our piece on the Caitlin Clark situation. We'll keep an eye on how it develops here, and what the WNBA is going to do about this in the future. Tom, let's take a quick last time out. We'll end a Super Sunday night off with talk. It's Heatwave Sports here on Fox Sports Radio.
Be a part of the show, 876-1340, or text Fox to 69187 and your message. This is Heatwave Sports on Fox Sports 1340.
Little Major League Baseball talk to end it out here on Super Sunday night, Heatwave Sports. Tom, I say we go around the league here as we're at the 60-game mark for most teams. So a little short of half the year, but a nice, nice amount of data for us to examine 2 months into the season. And let's start where the fun begins, Tom. That's the AL East. New York Yankees at 42-19, 3 games up on the Orioles, 37-20. This is what, look, we weren't Einstein when we said this, right, Tom? But this is what we saw happening preseason, and hopefully it stays this way to an ALCS matchup between these two teams. But regardless if you're a Yankee fan or you're an Oriole fan or you're a baseball fan and you like to bet on sports, especially baseball, the Yankees and the Orioles, man, that's just fun stuff right now.
Yeah, look, you're going to hear a continuous trend as I talk about first place teams throughout the league, and it's, oh my goodness, they're doing this without. The New York Yankees are doing this without the best pitcher in baseball, in Gerrit Cole. The Yankees did most of this damage without DJ LeMahieu, who is a starter on their team. The Yankees also have Jason Dominguez coming up, so forget about any trades. They also have Scott Efros, who they paid a pretty penny for. They're doing this without. They just got Tommy Canley back. It's scary how good the Yankees could be. Aaron Judge is clearly the best player in the sport, and he has been for years now. You might argue that Soto is the second best player in the sport. Don't give me that Ohtani stuff. They're better than him by far. So Judge and Ohtani, 1-2, are carrying this team. But even throw Stanton's got a little rejuvenation. The Yankees are doing this without, which is scary for everybody. But wait a minute. Baltimore kind of is too, right, Tim? The problem is the Yankees are getting reinforcements. Baltimore's losing guys. Baltimore lost two guys this week in Tyler Wells, who was a big part of the run last year, and John Means, who was supposed to be part of it this year. They're going in different directions, even though they're very close, just because the Yankees know the reinforcements are coming, and we know that Baltimore has to make moves.
What do you think when you look at, like I said, it's so fun to watch these teams play because you being a fan of the Yankees, me being a fan of the Orioles, ultimately what's best for baseball is healthy rivalries. And you know, if you're an Orioles fan, it's been lean years recently. And it seems like that's just the if you look at a chart, right, they do well and then they take bumps. But we've been watching this rebuild, and you being a baseball fan, you're all in on the Oriole rebuild, and you love all the moves they made. You love the way they rebuilt the farm system, and now it's paying off. So when you see them last year, maybe they weren't ready, Tom, right? Maybe they – but this year there's no excuses. This is the time to do it. So when you say reinforcements, what's that mean? You got to go out. So you brought Corbin Burns in the offseason to be your number one starter. That's worked out, obviously. You got to keep on that pace, right, Tom? You still have a deep farm system. Now you got to go out and get another piece of that puzzle, especially with the injuries, because the Yankees, like you said, Gerrit Cole, who I believe pitches rehab this week, is on the way back. You got a bullpen arm coming back. You got bench depth coming back or coming up. You have to stay basically neck and neck with them. That's just the way it is, right? So instead of, hey, we built this up to where we're at, you got to keep going. You got to take the next step, right, Tommy? And if that means shedding away some more youth, then that's just what you have to do if you're Baltimore. You got to go out. Basically, what I'm saying is you got to go out and get another starter, and you probably should look at a back-end guy as well. Because I you know how I feel about Craig Kimbrough, even though he's on again. I saw what he did to the Phillies in the playoffs last year.
Oh, look, I'm looking at Baltimore, and I say they don't understand how to win yet. And when I mean that, no offense to, you know, Cedric Mullins, the guy's batting 186 playing center field. You have Kobe Mayo in the minor leagues. Heston is in and out of the lineup. Colton Cowser in and out of the lineup, right? I mean, they just don't know how to win yet. You have to sacrifice players at times for the betterment of the team. Continuing to roll out Craig Kimbrell out there. Like you said, he's just not the answer. They have time to fix this, and they have the resources to do so. But there's something that we talk about in fantasy baseball, right, Tim? It's called prospect hugging. And fantasy baseball is the same thing in pro baseball, where a lot of people, a lot of these GMs get into a position, and I know the Yankees did it for years, prospect hugging. Oh, we love all our prospects. Yeah, but they can't all play, right? So deal them when you can. To go get, well, I don't want to lose the trade. Who cares about losing the trade if you're lifting a banner? And that's where the Orioles are. The Orioles need two absolute, probably three moves to win the World Series this year. They absolutely have to get an established closer. They need a closer, not a back end guy. No, they need a closer for this year. They have to get that closer. Number one. Number two, they need another arm. Because they lost Means, because they lost Wells, sure, they could put it together with guys like Irvin and maybe Kremer comes back. But no. Go get that other arm. He doesn't have to be a one, but he's got to be a two or a three with innings. And then I think they have to change the center fielder, Tim. I do. I don't think Mullins – look, he plays good defense, and he's fast. You can't win a World Series with a 190, 185, whatever he's batting, under 200 hitter in center field. You can't do it.
Over in the Central, the Cleveland Guardians, 4-game lead over the Royals, Tom. Twins 6 back. And Cleveland just continues to win games. Kansas City hanging in there, right, Tommy? 36-25. Looks like that for me, I see the Twins, even though they're on a nice little run right now, I think the Twins will fall back. I like to see what happens the rest of the summer with Cleveland and Kansas City.
And here we go. The Cleveland Indians are getting Grant Williams back pretty soon. And Williams was supposed to be a better prospect than Tyler Beebe, and he was supposed to be slotted into their number two after they lost Shane Bieber. Ben Lively looks like an easy transition. He looks like Shane Bieber 1.1. I don't know if Cleveland's going to continue to keep hitting like this, but Jose Ramirez, you heard quotes this week that Jose Ramirez is as good as Barry Bonds. Look, I think Bonds is the most overrated athlete I've ever seen. But let's calm down with the Jose Ramirez is better than Barry Bonds. But do you think that this hitting can last? I think the pitching will be fine. The bullpen is absolutely fantastic. They're getting Williams back. I think Cleveland's for real, and I doubted them big time before the year.
What happens when basically these two teams, Tommy, they're going to play a lot of their matchups later in the summer, Kansas City and Cleveland, and as much as in shock I was of the Royals early, and you kind of called them out with all the great moves that they made in the offseason to build the team up veteran-wise, how it'd work out. Raggins and Lugo and Singer, Tommy, that's a formidable 1-2-3 right now.
Yeah, it is. I mean, Lugo looks like the all-star starter right now. I mean, he really does. I think the difference is that the Kansas City bullpen is weak. MacArthur's fine. He's got two blow-ups on his ledger, but MacArthur is a fine closer, and they'll keep him in that role. But Schreiber is falling apart. Hernandez has been injured. I think that Zepra is good, but he's very young and kind of a specialist. Will Smith is a disaster. They have got to go out there and get arms, and they don't need a closer per se because I think they feel very comfortable with MacArthur. But they have to go out there and get arms. Get two or three of these middle relief type guys to bridge the gap, because what they have right now is not going to work long term.
How about in the West? Mariners 34-27. The only team right now over 500 in the division, and they actually had to put together a nice little month to get there. At one point, Tom, all the teams in the West under 500. They're 4 games up over the defending champions and the Rangers, who seem to be hitting the ball better, but problems there. I look, they have reinforcements coming, though, Tommy. And then the Astros, 7.5 back, but this division is a whole mess right now.
It really is, and the Mariners, we talked about before the year. I told you I had them winning the division because pitching, and more pitch. Their starters are dynamic. Their closer is great. They lost Matt Brash, but they were still able to get some decent relief. But they can't hit. And Julio's not having a good year. Look, if Julio turns it on, I could see them holding on to this lead. But if he doesn't, Tim, they can't hit. They're one of the few teams, one of the few contenders that they don't need a starter. They don't need bullpen help. They don't need any of that. They got Gregory Santos coming back in the second half. They don't need a starter. They don't need bullpen help. The whole world needs that. They need a bat. And I keep hearing rumors, Tim, that the New York Mets are going to be a complete fire sale soon. How about Pete Alonso playing first base for the Seattle Mariners? Start to get a little intriguing. Seattle starts to go, wait a minute, we might be able to win this thing.
Yeah, I was watching the series with the Angels this weekend. And, beginning of the game when they have the starting lineups, and I'm looking at the Mariners batting order, and I'm just scratching my head because I look at the Rangers batting order, And you look at the bats in that lineup, and I, look, they're all cold at the same time. I get it, right? But you have your leadoff batter in Seattle and J.P. Crawford batting barely 200. Julio is batting 270. He's actually that's actually gone up here recently. You have your catcher in Cal Raleigh who hits home runs, right, Tom? Barely batting 200. France, 250. You got Garver in there, under 200. It's just like the team that they're putting out there. You said it. If it wasn't for their starting pitching, they would be dead last behind the Angels in that division. I truly believe that. But their starters, they really are key right now. And you go deep in games, they go six, seven innings deep. Bullpen just has to finish it up, but I don't know how they're going to win in the playoffs with that lineup, like you said.
No, they're not. I mean, they're not. They have to go get – again, I know that you're saying the 200. They got to get a bopper in the middle of that lineup, and I know Pete Alonso isn't what Pete Alonso was a couple of years ago. He seems like the perfect fit for me. If you're looking to plug and play somebody, boom, Pete Alonso, middle of that lineup, it changes everything. It changes the entire look of who the Seattle Mariners are.
National League West. We already know about this one, right, Tom? So you got the Dodgers, seven games up over the Padres right now, 8.5 on the Giants. Last year's World Series representative for the National League Diamondbacks are 10 back. What happens here with this division with the Dodgers? I don't think they're catching them, but teams can make the playoffs like the Diamondbacks did last year and then do some damage.
The Padres just can't catch a break. Michael King started to come around. He looked good again today. All of a sudden, you go, okay, wait a minute. Their bullpen is fantastic. Who had the Padres with the most dynamic bullpen in baseball? Because that's what they have with Estrada and Sanchez. My goodness, they look good. And then they start to roll, and they start to kind of catch up, and they start to get into a position where you go, hey, here comes San Diego. Matt Waldron's fun. Oh, boy, here we go. Yu Darvish goes down. Joe Musgrove goes down in the same day. They lose two-fifths of their starting rotation. And let's be honest, it's their number one and number two starters. Devastating blow for San Diego.
Home-road dichotomy is mixed up too, Tom. They're six games under 500 at Petco, eight games over 500 away. That's kind of a weird stat if you're looking at.
And by the way, I said it was going to be a trend. The Yankees are doing this without, right? Cleveland's doing this without Bieber and company. Here comes the trend. The Dodgers are doing this. By the way, guys, the Dodgers are getting reinforcements. Walker Buehler just came back. Clayton Kershaw is still coming back. Forget about what he does in the postseason or what you think he does. He's still coming back. I mean, the Dodgers have reinforcements on the way. Blake Treinen just came back. It is amazing that these teams that are in first place are doing it without some of their key players.
How about the Giants, Tom? Can they make a little noise here? Snell looks like he's last couple starts here, right? Looks like he's maybe getting into season shape. I don't know if that's the proper word. Chapman appears to be hitting the ball a little
better. Now he's hurt, Tim. Snell went down today.
I didn't see that, no.
They yanked him before the fifth inning, which is just basically a Blake Snell start. But they yanked him before the fifth inning. He's out. He's hurt.
And what about the D-backs?
D-backs were a one and done. I think we knew that they were playing above their head. But I mentioned it before to you. You cannot expect to win in this league when your best player on your team is batting under 200. That's Corbin Carroll. Corbin Carroll has hit a wall head first.
Yeah. That sophomore slump, right, Tom?
It's a lot more than that. There's got to be something going on. He's just so talented. You can't just lose it all overnight. Just don't lose it like that.
In the Central, the Brewers, seven-game lead over the Cardinals, 7.5 over the Cubbies, so... Just a month ago, Cardinals were dead last in this division, but here they come, Tom, 28 and 29. They're almost at the 500 mark. They get a nice extra inning win over the Phillies today. That could be a fun matchup over the summer, the Brewers and the Cardinals.
Tim, the Milwaukee Brewers lost their coach. They traded away their Cy Young Award winner. They lost their number two starter in Brandon Woodruff. They lost their all-star closer in Devin Williams. And they have a lead, and they're fighting for first place. You know, this is – we talk about the Houston Astros' development and how they became a winner after a while. I mean, we talk about the Orioles and how they are now. Let's talk about Milwaukee, who just keeps churning out quality player after quality player after quality player. What Milwaukee has gone up against here, losing Burns, Woodruff, and Devin Williams and sitting in first place, is nothing short of miraculous.
Hoskins has been hurt most of the year, Tom. Keep Bopper bat in that lineup as well. What about St. Louis, though? We were talking about a couple weeks ago, sell them all. Now what do you do, Tommy? They're there. They're in the mix again.
It's just so hard. Do you go down with the ship at this point? Here's the thing. Teams have to be honest with themselves. While the Cardinals might win the division, Tim, do they have a prayer against the Dodgers, Braves, or Philly?
No.
Right. So is the division, winning the division, you know, is that enough? And they are still seven games back, by the way. But is that enough? If it does get interesting, there's still a game under 500. But is that enough? I don't know. I'm still selling, Tim. The underlying metrics still say this is an under 500 team on June 2nd. It's an under 500 team. They are a minus 41 in run differential, worst in the division. Tied for second worst in the National League, or tied for third worst in the National League. Okay? They've allowed 262 runs against. They've only scored 221. That's terrible. They're one game over 500 at home. This is smoke and mirrors. Trade people while it's smoke and mirrors, because even if you squeak into the playoffs, you have no prayer against Philly, Atlanta, or the Dodgers.
You said in hour one about fans or fan bases, and would you trade in 10 years of just complete misery, right, Tom, to win one World Series or one Stanley Cup? And you said that there would be people that would argue with you, no, I'd just rather be good all the time, even if I don't win the championship. I think St. Louis fans fall into that mindset, Tommy. I think Cardinal fans, at least some of the ones that I've known, would rather consistently be 80-plus wins, 90 wins, maybe make the playoffs, generally make the playoffs, than to have back-to-back-to-back losing seasons. And it's like almost misery for them to be losers, so they would not trade in that title, like you said, just to be relevant. That's when I look at the Cardinals and the fact that they've made this run now. Unless it falls out, the bottom falls out again before the deadline, I think they go with what they have, because they rather be relevant, and relevant to them is 85, 90 wins.
Tim, I'd be stunned if Paul Goldschmidt is playing for St. Louis Cardinals if they're not in the battle for first. You know, if it comes to the trade deadline and the Cardinals are seven games back, Paul Goldschmidt on the last year of a contract, he's gone. And I wouldn't be surprised if Arenado was gone. Look, I know Arenado's not having a good year, but imagine him in Seattle's lineup. That helps them. How about Goldschmidt up in Seattle? That helps them. You know, I think Seattle, St. Louis is a smart organization. You're right. They like their 90 wins, but I think they're also smart. Arenado, it might be hard to get rid of his contract. I think there's no way Goldschmidt finishes in St. Louis.
If the playoffs started today, St. Louis Cardinals, Tom, are in the playoffs.
That's what's pathetic. Under 500. Under right. 500.
In the playoffs, yeah.
How about my Nationals, though? Only kind of a game behind them.
Yeah, game and a half in the East. Did they have the horses to make it
last? I told everybody that wanted to listen, I had the Nationals team total over. I told you they played damn near close to 500 and maybe get a playoff spot. I love this Nationals team. They are fun. And oh, by the way, they have James Wood coming back.
They're fun to watch. Do they have the horses to take it all summer long, though, and get into the playoffs? And mind you, we're talking about how bad the National League is. Last year's runners-up, the team that we said was one and done, the Diamondbacks, Tom, they're just two games out of a playoff spot. So
here's the thing. The Nationals can keep it up. If the Mets and Marlins sell, which everybody's speculating they're going to sell, if they sell everybody, man, you look at the Nationals' schedule and you go, they're playing the Mets and the Marlins quite a bit. And yeah, all of a sudden, you know, if they become kind of just absolute pushovers, Washington could go 500. Washington could win 80 games, 82 games, get into the playoffs. And, man, what a fun story that could be.
The Braves and the Phillies also play the Mets and Marlins a lot in the last few months, Tom. And the Phillies running away at this point. They can make a run here and run away with that division with the injured Braves.
The Braves are in some trouble, but we knew that. Acuna goes down, that was a problem anyway, but I didn't think they had the pitching. Look at what Chris Sale has been doing. That's great, but now all of a sudden he gives up 8 runs to the A's. And what is the immediate response that you think? Uh-oh, arm problem again? Because he always has arm problems. I don't think you can count on Chris Sale to be pitching 160, 170, certainly not 180 innings this year. I don't know where the Braves are going to find pitching. Again, another team that they can absolutely turn around and make some moves because they have a pretty good farm system.
Yeah, Tom, we need to get this Chris Sale move done before he ends up on the
yeah, after that yesterday, huh? Changes his trade market a little.
Yeah, it does. It does. How about the Phils? They lost tonight, but another team that they almost for me fall into the Orioles and the Yankees. When you're watching them, it's never, the game's never over, Tom. They could be down one run or they could be down six, but with that lineup, the baseball players, key situations, a good manager there, and now the pitching is solid. Pretty they go solid 1-3 with Suarez. They're going to be a tough out as well. And I know both you and I had Oriole Philly World Series, and so far so good.
Are the Phillies counting on innings from Suarez late in September?
That's a big question mark. Yeah.
Yeah, he is.
And what you saw from Taijuan Walker doesn't make you feel safe there. I think though that's another team, Tommy, quietly have a nice farm system there that they're not afraid to make a move, though. That's the thing. So maybe the Phillies are buyers, significant buyers at the deadline, right?
I think they go get a closer. I like Alvarado and I like Hoffman, but I don't think that they're sold that those guys can close it out in the playoffs. They want an established closer. And when you start to look around the league, who's going to be the team that pays for Mason Miller? That's been a large conversation, but there's other closers to be had. He's old, but Kenley Jansen's still around. You know, I mean, he's still a guy that you could go out there and say, yeah, I'll take a shot at him. David Bednar certainly might jump onto a team as well.
Even my guy at Anaheim, Iglesias, or Estevez, excuse me, right? He's another one, man. You have him on your fantasy team, you're sweating bullets every time he goes out there, but that's what it seems to be at deadline time, that teams kind of just go with a guy that has some type of proven record, and he did have a significant amount of saves last year. So that's a guy you could be looking at, too. I think the rich get richer, though, Tom. I think the teams that will be involved at the deadline will be the top teams we've talked about.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you look at Miami's going to sell Scott. Yeah, the Mets have some bats to sell, not really a lot of arms. They're going to be sellers. Pirates are always seemingly sellers with Chapman and Bednar. Both could be out of town. There's some interesting stuff. And like you said, the Angels, what do they have to offer? Well, they got some guys. I mean, Tyler Anderson's going tomorrow. He's looked fantastic again. We watched him do it 2 years ago for the Dodgers. Anderson's the below-the-market, below-the-radar type of arm that I was talking about, a couple of these teams going to invest in. a guy right in the middle of the rotation you throw in, you go, wait a minute, okay, yeah, he could give you some innings.
I've been looking at trying to pick him up in our league, Tom, and I'm just like, oh, I'll give him one more start. He's bound to explode, implode, and he just keeps going out there. I thought the Yankees were going to touch him up, and he pitched well. So I'm sure if I bid on him and I win him, he'll get blown up after that. So, yeah, just stay away. Right.
I have written his name down 3 times in our pro boards. That's how we pick up guys. 3 times I wrote his name down and didn't press send. You know, because I had him 2 years ago during that wonderful Dodger run, and I'm going, is it like the ex-girlfriend that you just, you know, you want back? Like, is that what I'm doing? And he just keeps going out there and proving me wrong.
Do you spend more than $1 on him, though, Tom?
Nah, no way. Not at his age.
That's my thought, too. It's like whoever puts him up there for $1, you got to spend $2 to win him, right? So at that point, it's just, why even bother?
A couple of guys like that. We the Ben Livelys of the world.
Yes.
32-year-old journeyman, but he keeps putting up zeros. The Trevor Williams of the world. And yes, Trevor Williams keeps doing this, you know?
Tom, let everybody know about the website and all the great things that Tommy Barton's up to.
Beautiful 2-0 day today. I had the Yankees team total over. I had the New York Yankees 2-0 day today, and that's what we're doing here at TomBartonSports.com. Still crushing it in the NBA, still crushing it in hockey. Major League Baseball is every day, all day. I already got my play up for tomorrow. Really liking this one as well. Jump on TomBartonSports.com. TomBartonSports.com. Go check it out, guys.
Thank you, Tommy. Get some Z's. Well, I don't even know why I say that because I know better. Enjoy, though. Yeah, I was going to say, it's time. You're working 24 hours anyway. So. For Tommy, for Angel, we'll talk to everybody next week. Thank you again for tuning into Heatwave Sports, only on Fox Sports Radio Las Vegas, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM. Have a great sports week.